Good morning, everybody. This is Saturday, May 9th, 2020. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Carol Werlius. And my associate, Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, www.indicatorinformation.com, iqdcalls.com, and YouTube. As we get closer and closer to our expected RV, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it's the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. As always, your questions are welcome. Just press star 6 to raise your hand. And we do have two questions already, so let's get started. Good morning, McKinley. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. What's up?
Good. That's good. Sounds like you recovered from your incident.
Oh, I have so many of them, it's hard to keep track anymore.
Okay. I'll just leave that alone.
Okay.
Listen, my question, the last time you were on, you mentioned some gentleman who had the latest information concerning the exchange. And I think his name was Joe, possibly. And you said anyone who wanted information could get it from you. So
okay.
You were down.
A few weeks ago, Mark Z put out a list of things to be prepared for your RV.
Okay.
And I have that. And I said, if you want that, let me know. I'll write it down right now. And after the call, I'll send it to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Okay, we got one more call here. Calvin. Calvin, are you there?
Well, I just wanted to say good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for joining us today. So no questions? So we'll get one, okay?
Carol,
okay.
You're breaking up real bad.
Now we'll put it back on, okay? There we go. You got back. Well, maybe you're from somewhere else. Working on this, guys. I know he's here. There he is. Oh, this is weird. Well, Jim, I'm trying to bring you back in. I'll keep trying. In the meantime, I have another question here. Good morning, Dean.
Hi. Carol, I got a hypothetical question, but say I was buying something, a car, anything, would it be best to borrow the money from the mother load, use the certificates, or declare a dividend and use the money that way, get the money that way?
If you borrow money from the trust...
Do you understand?
Yeah, I do. If you borrow money from the trust, you have to make a payment, and that's not a big deal because you're still going to make a minimal payment, you know, 1% interest or something like that. So you can do that if you want to. You can create another trust and fund it, and that trust will own the car, which is what you really want to do in the long run.
Right.
And as far as messing around with the certificates and doing that, I wouldn't bother with that. I wouldn't go that way.
Okay. Well, I thank you for the answer. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome, sir. Let me see. I got to get Jim back here. My goodness. Jim, I cannot seem to get you back on this board. Why don't you hang up and call back in, and I'll try again that way. In the meantime, I will get started. So, anyway, as we all anxiously await this event, we must be prepared and ready for it. The exchange of currencies and redemption of bonds is more like to create an avalanche of funding the likes of which the world has never seen. Those of us that have been astute enough to purchase those currencies and bonds will be able to benefit not only our own families, but families all over the world. The demand for financial help around the world is at an all-time high due to the shutdown of global economies due to COVID-19. If we are unprepared, we must consider the best way to protect our newfound wealth. If we are to be prepared. Unfortunately, when someone has wealth, there is always somebody else that wants to take it away from them. In the past, taxes were a major hit to anyone's pocket. From what we've been told in recent years, this revaluation is not a taxable event. So it's one less thing to worry about. Another worry is how litigious our society has become. If we properly protect our assets, that worry goes away also. I'm sure most of you recognize that I'm talking about using trust to protect those assets. While there are a number of trusts available, none of them will provide the asset protection you will realize with our irrevocable common law trust. This trust is born to live in contemplation of life, not death, as many trusts are. It is a planning tool for life, not just estate planning. And, you know, folks, I've still got some open mic here. I've got to try to fix this. Excuse me. Okay. Dean, why don't you do star six again and mute yourself, please? Yeah, there he goes. Okay. So we do have another caller. I'll try this one. Oh, maybe it's Jim. It is Jim. Hi. Jim?
Spoke. See how she abuses me? Runs me off the system. I got to come with my cell phone and sneak in the back door. She just is terrible to me.
I'm sure all you feel real sorry for him, don't you?
Yeah, I know. We love technology, don't we?
Yes, yes. It still says, you know, you didn't even come in under your name, just your phone number, which is really weird. So I do have you here as a questioner, so just I have to be careful not to hang up on you. All right, so let's go back to where we were. There are many advantages of using the contract trust. There are obviously several, but for most people, the single biggest feature is that you can become the trustee. Quite simply, there is no one between you and your money. The trust does not rely on any state laws or regulations for its power or authority. The trust organization is a contract in trust form. It derives its legality and lawfulness from the Constitution of the United States of America, Article 1, Section 10, which preserves and protects the unalienable rights of all Americans to enter into a contract. The trust owns its assets in fee simple, meaning 100% of the assets, that is managed by one or more trustees, which I mentioned will typically be you. The assets of the trust will never be subject to probate or inheritance or estate taxes, which is a big deal. It saves a lot of estates a lot of money. The assets of the trust are protected from third-party collectors who may have an issue with you personally. Because it is not registered in any state, your privacy and anonymity are pretty much guaranteed. You know, many of you have asked about the players in the trust. I mean, you're looking at our application and you don't quite figure out what name is supposed to go where. First of all, you are the original exchanger investor. If you are married, you are both exchanger investors. The second person involved is the creator. The third person is also you. So let me explain. I just mentioned that the trust is a contract in trust format. As you all know, one cannot contract with oneself. For that reason, the first player in this trust is called the creator. The creator can be anyone you choose, your adult child, your brother-in-law, a trusted coworker. The creator temporarily takes title to your assets and exchanges them into the contract trust, thus initiating the trust. This is all on paper. We take care of all of it. The creator doesn't need to know how much of anything you are exchanging into this trust. As this is an exchange, you need to get something back, right? The creator gives you $21 in 100 trust certificate units. I usually suggest that you give the curator $21 ahead of time or take them out to lunch and then not spending their own money. Jim, you want to comment on the $21? Jim?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear.
All right. Well, the $21 was a way to adhere to the Constitution. In the Constitution, it says any debt over $20 you're entitled to a jury trial. Well, that, folks, is the closest you'll get to a common law trial in the present situation we have right now. You have the opportunity to educate the jury and explain to them exactly what you're trying to accomplish. So we put in there any, since it says any debt over $20, we just use $21. And what we want to do is show the world that we're trying to do this under the real situation of real money. So I've always used silver certificates. They're inexpensive and easy to acquire. You just go to a numismatic coin shop, and they have a bunch of them. I buy the ragged ones that are, you know, barely staying together for, you know, a buck, buck and a half, on the, and then I just put them in an envelope and put them with the trust. But that's why we came up with this $21. You want to be able to go and have a jury listen to your story. And that's about how I do it. So, Carol?
Right. Thank you. God forbid we ever need to be in that situation where we need a jury trial, but it's nice to know that we have that backup. So, okay, so we'll go back to the curator. The curator's last task is to appoint a first trustee. While he or she can appoint anyone they choose, the typical and most logical appointee for trustee is you, the original exchanger investor. Let's face it, if you were smart enough to buy all that currency, wouldn't you be the most logical choice to continue to take care of it? After the appointment of the first trustee, the curator exits the contract trust with absolutely no further responsibilities, duties, authority, or liability regarding the trust organization. So you are now the sole trustee with 100% responsibility of the management of the trust. There is no outside trustee, trust manager, or trust protector. There, again, is no one between you and your money. If you are married and you wish to stay that way, you will name your spouse the second trustee. You both declare the trust to be in full force and effect and pledge your best efforts to the management of the trust. Most trusts address your lifespan with named beneficiaries who may receive your estate upon your death. This contract trust was designed to live, so you must name one or more successor trustees to manage the trust upon your death or if you become unable or incapable of doing so yourself. And folks, this is very, very important. It is so important that we will not complete a trust for you unless you name a successor trustee. I mean, it's that important. Because if you die without a successor trustee, it all winds up in court. And nobody wants that. You do this because you don't want to go through probate. You don't want to go through all that stuff, all that public stuff. If you do not have a successor trustee, you just negated all, some of the advantages you get from having this trust. We just talked about this earlier. You may choose to have a bloodline clause in your trust, stating that all future trustees must be of your bloodline, proven by a DNA test. I just lost my train of thought. This means that you may appoint your daughter as successor trustee, and she may appoint her children, but she cannot appoint her husband. So therefore, if she dies, her husband and, quote-unquote, his side of the family doesn't get to take over. So it's always going to be within your bloodline. The last minute that we provide in the trust is the appointment of an executive trustee. That, of course, is you and your spouse, if you have one. Very simply, that means that one executive trustee has the authority to act for and on behalf of the other. Both must agree to any actions, but the signature of one is sufficient to execute any actions upon which they have agreed. When completing your application, you will see that we ask for the domicile of the trust. And people ask, well, what is that? Why can't I just use my home address? Well, many states impose high income taxes. You know, California, New York, to name a few. While we have been told that the exchange is not taxable on a federal level, we are unsure about state taxation at this point. For that reason, we suggest that you domicile the trust in a state that does not levy a state tax. Corporations and LLCs have been using this particular method for years. We recommend Wyoming and Washington, as there are few, if any, laws in Wyoming and Washington regarding this type of trust. There are lots of rules on the books regarding trusts, but this is a totally different animal than most than any statutory trust. A mailbox in Evanston, Wyoming, will cost about $120 to set up for a year, and will take up to three trusts per box. We have two options in Washington that will do up to five trusts for about $125. You must maintain that address to keep the trust protected from any state tax. A little aside here, many of you have had your trust domiciled in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we have since learned that they have gone out of business. So if you have not already changed your domicile from Cheyenne, you need to do that. If you need instructions, please drop me a line or drop Jim a line, and we'll send you the instructions that you need.
Carol, we
yes?
have them now on the website. I put them on a week ago. So if
Good.
You go to the tools, on the menu, go to tools, and you will see it. And let me pull that up real quick. Just take a second. And so what we're trying to stay ahead of the curve on some of the stuff, so I'm pulling it up. There it is. And so go to tools, and you'll see down there is list of the places where you have your mail drops and the pricing, and also we have the 8822B, F stand for form, on here with information on how to file that to change your domicile. And folks, it's a simple process. It's a one-pager, and I highly recommend you send in a certified mail, return and receipt requested. And since this is an administrative event, the moment it's postmarked, you can consider it done. That's my comment.
There you go. You also have the suggested minute for that change, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. And also the addendum for the abstract of trust.
Yes.
Okay. So, folks, you're all set. If you haven't already done that, just go to our website, and everything you need will be there. Thank you, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while privacy is of the utmost importance, any mailbox rental will provide a United States Post Office form which requires your name and home address. So don't get freaked out. Oh, they're going to tie it back to me. Don't get freaked out. You have to do it. We also suggest that you send the trust a piece of registered mail to further verify the address of the trust. There is a sample on our website. Jim, you want to comment on that?
Sure. Okay, so the idea of that was you want to make sure that something goes to the Postal Service. You want to send that return receipt requested registered mail to your mailbox. And then that's just leave the envelope sealed. And well, let's put it this way. When they get it, you want to have them send it back to you. So have your Postal Service forward that piece of mail. When you get it, do not open it. Leave it with your trusts. And basically what you want to do is put a little letter in there, handwritten if you'd like. Now, to whom it may concern, this is to prove that this trust is domiciled in this example, Washington State, and not in my home state. And then you don't open that. If you ever, ever get drug into court, you hand that unopened letter to the judge. There's all your proof you need right there.
There you
go. That's how we do it.
Okay. You know, there's somebody who has his hand raised, and if I answer that, then I will drop you again, Jim. So we're going to have to save all the questions to the very end, folks. And we'll have to have Jim try to call in again on the regular line. You know, we'll make it work somehow. Anyway, where were we? The application also asks for what you're putting into the trust. While we don't want or need to know amounts, we do need to know the type of currency that you have. So I don't know how much Zim, I don't care how much Zim or IQD or Vietnamese dong you have. Just tell me that you have that. We also ask for your Social Security number. Again, we use this to obtain your employer identification number. And you must have a valid EIN to open a bank account. And, you know, some people balk at that, too. Well, I can get my own EIN. Well, we would prefer to do it because we know we're doing it the right way. There are so many different options when you go to the IRS website, so many different options to get an EIN number. We want to make sure it's the right one for you.
Carol?
Yes.
Okay. Also, folks, we use a very strong encryption system. It's DoD-7 compliance. Your applications, your trusts, any communication between you, we move it out of, at least I move it out of Outlook and into your file. And then whenever we walk away from a computer, that system shuts itself down. And it takes 256 character type registration to create the password, so it's very, very strong. So we value your information to the point where we use DoD-7, that's Department of Defense 7, the highest you can buy as a civilian encryption system. We both have it on our computers, and all of our worker bees we're bringing on to help us post-RV will have the same program.
It's a good point, Jim. Thank you. People are, you know, because some people don't care. Some people, you know, will text me their social or they'll text me their credit card number, while other people are very, very concerned about it. And in this day and age of people stealing our identity, we do have to protect us ourselves, and we are also feel very strongly that we need to protect our clients as well. Many of you are concerned about the paperwork necessary to stay out of trouble with contract trust. Each trust comes with an invitation to our members-only website that we've just been talking about. The website has a plethora of information for your use, including how to operate the trust and all the legal backup for it. We have sample minutes and current suggestions as well. The biggest thing to remember with an asset protection plan is do not commingle the trust money with your money. That's a big no-no in anybody's book. You also need to write periodic minutes to reflect your actions and give your future successor trustees a history of what you have done with the trust. We do have additional trusts you may wish to consider in the future. All you really need right now is the Motherlode Trust. You may have heard that we will need separate accounts for whatever currency you exchange. The key word here is account. You can open multiple accounts under the same trust. Further down the line, you will probably want additional trusts for your projects, real estate, vehicles, etc. I mean, if you feel you want to get those other trusts started now, go for it. I mean, we have the ability to do that for you, and actually the cost of the trust is a little cheaper now than it will be post-RV. You may also want our triple play, which includes a power will, durable power of attorney, and healthcare directive. So with that, Jim, I'm going to turn it over to you. What are your comments today?
Well, I was just on the website. I'm doing a small upgrade on it, update. We've got some plugins that got a little behind on schedule, so I'm doing that. It'll take a couple minutes. I'm going to go in there and adjust a couple things. I'm going to find those minutes we spoke about. I'll put those on the new tab, so they're easy to find. So I was just looking through some of our notes. Well, first off, I want to say one thing here. The idea for this particular conversation today, I'm going to give a shout-out to Jim Martin, brilliant man, good friend now. He was talking to me and says, now, I don't really understand, you know, how this works with the creator. And this is, well, you know, that's a good conversation to have. And so he recommended we talk about this, and I'm going to write up a paper and put it on the website also. So other than that, I can't say anything else to tell you. Other than if you want, I will go ahead and sign off temporarily, and you can start taking some questions, and I'll get back in if I can.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take everybody off Q&A. I think that's why I couldn't bring you back in the second time. Take you off Q&A for a moment, and guys, we will be right back.
All right.
Hang on. Now it's that Q&A. Yeah. I don't know. It's not working either. Okay. We'll try this one for a while and see what happens. And I'm sure Jim will be calling in a moment. Let's see. So in the meantime, if anybody has any questions, now would be a good time. You can unmute yourself with star 6.
Good morning, Carol. This is Leslie Boyle. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great, thanks. And I'm still unclear about the minutes. And, you know, I have a couple of trusts. And
yes.
I saw that on the website you had these templates. So do we pick one of those templates and print it out? We have all these nice paper on, you know, in the booklet. So do we just copy the template and handwrite it on one of these nice paper sheets? Or
if you want to, or, you know, really we designed them so you could just cut and paste, you know, take whatever minute you need, put it into Microsoft Word or whatever you're using.
Print it out.
edit it and print it out on the same paper. The paper fits in most printers.
Oh, it does. Oh, okay, that can print right on there. Oh, I see what you're saying. So, for example, for how often do we need to do minutes?
Well, when you do anything major, you need to talk about whatever you've done, just so your future trustees will know what action you took and why you took it. If you, if you don't do any business, whatever, throughout the year, as has been the case with most of us for many years, at least you need to write an end-of-year minute.
Okay. So I just opened a checking account. Would I make a minute for that, saying that I've on this date I opened the checking account for this trust?
It wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt at all.
Okay. And then, like, I just bought an asset for one of the trusts, so I would just make a notation in the minutes that I purchased this asset for the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so anything I do, it's just keeping a log of anything that I do. Any upgrades to the asset or repairs to the asset, would that require a minute?
If the trust paid for it, absolutely.
Yeah. So if the trust pays for it, just keep a record and then the receipts and all that.
Right.
Okay. All right. And you said the cost of the trust are going up after post-RV?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I know I need another one. And did you have any kind of bundle package? Did I hear at one time if you get more than one or something like that?
Well, we haven't done that, but we could consider it. You know, Jim, you're back online now.
Yes,
we could certainly put something like that together.
Oh, okay. Okay, that would be great because I did want to get another one here soon. Mm. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and I'll start doing these minutes. Oh, and by the way, when I went to the bank and I took my books both times, they were so impressed with how professional they were and how organized they were. They said these are the best trusts they've ever seen presented to them. I just want you to know that.
That's fantastic. Thank you. That warms my heart.
yeah, really. Because the bank works with a lot of trusts. They were so impressed with how well this looked. So
may I ask, what bank was that, may I ask?
Bank of America.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
It was
all right.
Bank. Yeah.
That's
all right.
Great.
So
thank you.
How do I unmute myself? Is it star six?
Star six. Should do it again, yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Jim, I lost you again.
Oh, I'm here.
Okay. There you are. I can't get rid of you that quickly, right?
trying. You're definitely trying.
Okay. Gary, what do you have to say to
me? Yeah, hey, Carol. Question. I know most of us are probably going to buy a new car or truck or motorcycle or some kind of vehicle after the RV happens. If we put that into a trust, which I'm planning on doing, do we need an EIN number for a vehicle trust?
Not unless the vehicle trust plans on having a bank account or paying taxes. I don't think so.
Okay. I didn't think so, but I wasn't sure, and I thought I'd ask.
Okay. Good question, right, though. Thank you. Okay. Dean, I see you have your hand up again.
Yes. Regarding that address in Wyoming, the old one, you know, that went out of business, I made the mistake of leaving it on my, it was on my income tax that was filed in 2018. 2019 hadn't been filed yet, and they sent my stimulus check to that old address.
Oh, no.
Which I have no way of knowing what's happened to it. I've called the post office out there and everything, and they say it'll be refunded to the IRS. But I don't know any way to contact that old address. I don't think they exist anymore. So
I don't know either. If anybody else, I know a few of you have contacted some of the people around the box shop. So if any of you have any idea how they can get a hold of Brooke, please let us know, and I'll pass that information on to Dean. But Dean, I've got some questions for you.
Okay.
Why did you file an income tax return?
Say again?
Why did you file an income tax return? Did your trust make over $600?
No, but with my CPA, they had that, you know, my trust addressed on it whenever I filed my personal income tax.
So your CPA is the one that messed up.
Yeah.
Your personal income tax should have absolutely zip to do with your trust.
Right. But anyway, they got it got confused, and that's why my my stimulus file was mailed to that address on May the 1st.
And how did you learn that? Because I know a lot of people are wondering what happened to their check. How did you learn that?
I went to, you know, the stimulus check and IRS.
Oh. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you about getting that money back, but your CPA certainly made an error in using that address for your personal tax return.
Amen. What I did is I called Wyoming in their post office out there. They said it would be returned to the IRS, and I filed, you know, I made sure my 2019 filed income tax would be, you know, with the right address, personal address on it. Mm-hmm. So that's all I could do, all I could think to do.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else you can do. But good luck on that.
Thank you. One other question.
Sure.
On stuff like furniture and guns and tools, you know, mechanic tools and stuff, do you just go ahead and leave them in your name, or do you have a special trust for that, or do you add it to one of these trusts?
You don't add it to one of these trusts because this, you know, your initial trust is your mother lode that holds all of your currency and whatever money it produces. We do have a personal property trust. If you feel that, you know, your personal items you own, like I've always had a gun collection, art collection, tools, baseball cards, whatever is of value to you, you might want to consider putting that into a trust. And because none of those things hold any inherent liability, you can put them all together, unless you're talking about tractors and stuff like that. But, you know, personal property, like you just mentioned, could all go into one personal property trust.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carol and Jim.
Thank you, Dean.
Can I make a comment about
that? Sure, please do.
Okay. For me, I have a little label maker, and I have put the name of each specific trust as a label, and then I write a number, and I stick it on things. For example, my computers. I have some very high-end computers. They're owned by an equipment trust. So the name, well, it doesn't matter what the name is, but the name of the equipment trust is on the sticker, and then I put a number, and I have a ledger that shows, you know, 001 is computer 1. 002 is computer 2. The reason I put the stickies on there is if there's ever an issue with my successor trustees of where this equipment's at and what trust it's in, there's a sticker on the piece of equipment that they'll see and they'll say, oh, that's in the equipment trust and that's 001. I do the same thing with my car. I have a sticker on my car in the glove compartment and the inside of the door owned by, and I have the trust name, and it's car 001. It's always car 001. We only have one car per trust. But the idea of labeling equipment and stuff is future and current evidence that you know what you're doing, that this is now owned by a trust, not in your personal name. And speaking of that, you have to have a permission slip if your car is in trust in the glove compartment from the trustee, being myself, that I have permission to drive it. I'm the trustee of the trust, and I hereby give myself permission to drive the vehicle. I know, it's me, myself, and I. The three of us get along great.
And we do provide that.
Yes, we do. So all that stuff is on our website someplace.
Yeah, that reminds me, several, oh my gosh, 25, 30 years ago, I did a trust for a company in Seattle that did just that. They labeled everything.
Yep.
When the company went bankrupt, the trust was a different the trust owned all the equipment, all the computers, all the furniture. The business was the business. When the company went bankrupt, they couldn't take any of the things that were owned by the trust. And as Jim just mentioned, if anything is everything is already pre-labeled, there's no question about it. So that's a good thing to consider. Very good thing. Okay, so Audrey, I saw your hand up earlier. Did you have a question? If you did, come back.
I think Jim may have answered it. I was wondering, do we have to have a separate trust? A trust, you know, you have your mother loan trust. Then from, I guess, attached to that, do you have to have a separate trust for each vehicle and each residence and each investment, like if you had investment property for each one? Do you have to have a separate trust for those? Or is it a separate account?
No, those are separate trusts. And we recommend that to keep each asset as insulated and isolated as possible. So let's say you've got two or three homes. You've got one there in Buffalo. You have a summer, winter home in Florida. And you have a place on the island. So your winter home in Florida, you invite some neighbors over and the kid knocks his head on the pool and drowns in the pool. They can sue you for everything, right? And granted, you're going to have really good insurance, but that house is at risk. But if that's the only house that is owned by that trust, it doesn't spill over into any of the other houses or any of your other property. Does it make sense?
Yes, it does. Okay. And for each of those, trusts, that type is, that's kind of a part of the mother lode trust, but it's where the money goes from the mother lode to those trusts, like for buying property, for buying real estate, vehicles, stuff like that.
Well, that's what we suggest, that you the mother lode trust funds and creates another trust. So when this occurs, my mother lode trust is going to fund a trust that's going to buy a house in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And that trust will own the house in Florida, but the mother lode will have paid for it by funding that trust.
And do you the paperwork that's involved in showing that that property belongs to, does that property belong to that, is the name of the second trust a different name other than your mother lode trust?
Yes. Absolutely. Every trust has its own name. If the trust does need an EIN number, it's its own EIN number.
Okay. And if you, if the mother lode trust provides money for that property trust, then is that owned by the mother lode trust, or is that?
So it's owned by the new trust, but the mother lode trust owns the certificates to the new trust. And I know it sounds really convoluted. We have this all written out.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, is that on the website or not?
I think it is. I'll have to find it. We have so much on there, I have to double check.
Yeah, I think we did put it on there quite some time ago. But that's the whole idea. So the mother lode trust funds the real estate trust. Therefore, because it is the original investor exchanger of that trust, it owns the certificates. But the real estate trust now has enough money in it to buy that house and to furnish it if it so pleases. But that's how that separation. I'm pretty sure we do have that on the website. So.
Okay, if someone were going to sue you for that one particular piece of property that's a trust, that's the mother lode trust funded, can they, after they sue the trust for that property, can they come and continue to sue the mother lode trust?
Nope.
Or no?
Okay. Mm-mm.
Okay.
That's good questions, Audrey. Thank you.
But they can sue the property trust.
They can sue the property trust, yes.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I didn't know. So that's a lot of trust. I have a lot of vehicles and a lot of property and for real estate that deals with your business real estate that you're going to start doing or investing in. And so all of those have to have their own separate trust that's funded by the mother lode trust. Now, the
that is
tax
correct.
Situation for that, I know the mother lode trust is not taxed. Is there any tax?
No. Back up. The RV is not a taxable event. The mother lode trust will pay taxes on any income that it earns.
Okay.
As a result of this. Okay. Let's say if you have Zim and they're talking about a structured payout and you're going to make interest on that, that money will be taxable. If the mother lode trust actually makes an investment from that trust, which we don't recommend, but for an example, if it did, whatever income it earned off of that investment would be taxable. So it's not that the mother lode trust is not taxable. The original RV event is not taxable to our knowledge.
Okay. Okay. So then the only thing that would be taxable would be your, like if you had a property that you incurred a profit. Maybe you rented out the spaces in it or apartment building and you rented out each apartment.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all taxable.
And
yep.
It's taxable to that particular
trust, yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it probably is in your minutes. I'll look and see, so to refresh my memory on it. But if it's not in the minutes, then drop us a line.
Then drop us a line, and we'll make sure it's on there.
Will do. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay. Jim, I see you keep coming back in. Did you have a comment on that?
No, I'm just sitting here listening, enjoying everything.
Okay.
Sometimes your name
is there, and then it goes away, and then it comes back. So anyway.
I'm just that kind of guy. What can I say?
Yeah, I guess. See. Anyway, Raul, your hand is up. Do you have a question?
Hi, Carol. Yes, I have two questions.
Okay, covering the sound.
A little while ago, I heard a woman saying that she had gone to her Bank of America to show her the trust that she had, and she was complimented on how well they were organized. I am under the impression that I don't take the trust that I bought from you until the RV happens.
Some people, number one, I really don't recommend taking the whole trust anywhere. We usually recommend you just take the abstract of trust and the IRS letter giving you your EIN.
Yes.
So the fact that she did is just, I guess she went to open an account, and that's fine. A lot of people have opened accounts pre-RV, and that's okay. Personally, like I said, I don't recommend that you take the whole trust anywhere. When you do go to your appointment for your RV, give them your abstract of trust and your EIN letter. If you want to be extra cautious, you might want to put a copy of your trust in your binder, but don't bring in your folder or your briefcase, but don't bring it out unless they ask for it.
Yeah, I have that. I have copies of my trust already. The other question that I have, thank you by that question, the answer. I have another question. The woman just left you is talking about buying different trusts for different things that you have. Now, I bought a motherlode trust and a management trust. How do these other trusts interface with those two items that I purchased from you?
How do they?
Yeah,
well, the motherlode trust, the motherlode trust, as I just mentioned, will fund those other trusts. All right?
Okay.
Now, let's say you buy three houses, and that's a pain in the neck, right? You got to pay taxes, you got to do maintenance, you got to pay caretakers to be there when you're not there. And do you really want to work with three separate bank accounts? No. So that's why we suggest the management trust comes into play.
Oh, okay.
Contracts with these other trusts to do all that stuff.
I guess.
Therefore, the real estate trusts do not need to have bank accounts. Therefore, they do not need EIN numbers. But the management trust can take care of all of those necessities for the real estate trust or vehicle trust or whatever. Does it make sense?
It makes sense. So then, in a sense, you're saying, I don't know if this is what I can translate from what you said, but if the management trust is going to handle all those, do I still need different trusts for each item that I bought?
You still want to keep them isolated and insulated, as
okay.
I said. So they're their own separate entity.
Okay, so then they will work within the management trust.
Yes, you could contract with the management trust to take care of all those other things.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Carol. I appreciate that. And Jim, I appreciate your comments as well.
Thank you.
And that's all I have.
Okay, I want to expand on that for Raul. Well, thank you, Raul. That was very good. How I set up my management trust is like an escrow company. You know, when you make a house payment, you're usually making a payment to an escrow company. The escrow company then separates out from the payment the pro rata for the insurance and the taxes, and then they make the interest principal payment onto the lender. Well, it's basically what you're doing with a management trust. So the way I've set mine up is I have one account, and then I have a contract for my real estate trust and my automobile trust to manage the money for those to with the management trust. And then the money's in the management trust account, and then I pay those however I want to do it. I have a debit card, and I also have checks. And so when I write a check, I have a two-part check. The bottom, I explain exactly what is being paid, because the management trust has a different name than the real estate trust and has a different name than the automobile trust. So they have to know who's paying what and why. It's not uncommon to do that. So consider your management trust kind of like an escrow company. It's managing the funds for your different entities, and you simply have a contract. And we have the contracts. I mean, I'm sure there's someplace on the Internet here on our
website. I'm sure they are, yeah.
Under the new
and
tab?
We have, go ahead.
Under the new tab or the you said you have a tab that says new on it. Would it be there?
I have to look and see here real quick. I've got so much going on right now. It's hard for me to keep up with everything on this website.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, we've had, let's see, is it in here?
I don't think it's under new.
No, it's not. But it's there. I will try and add that to the new tab, because we're going to take some of the stuff from this conversation today, and I'm going to put a synopsis together sometime in the next, give me about 72 hours, and then I'll add that to the new tab, and we'll have all the locations on the website where all of these documents are at. Because I'm making copious notes today, because I think that's important for everybody, and I will get this all on there. And then so give me about 72 hours and then go to the new tab, and then you'll see the location of all these documents.
Sounds good, Jim. Thank you for that input.
You bet.
Okay. Thank you, Roald. That was great. Jerry, nice to hear from you today.
Hi, Carol and Jim. This is Jerry.
Hi, Norma. Hi.
A quick question about the mother load. We understand that you're saying the mother load funds the other trust, but does that mean that we're bypassing the need for what we would call a banking trust that would normally protect the mother load from outside activities?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Can you answer that, Jim?
Yeah, okay. There's no banking trust per se.
Yeah.
The mother load trust, when you go to set up your exchange, you're going to use your mother load trust.
Right.
The mother load trust is the one that controls the money. It will then contract in various ways, you can do it, with each one of the other trusts as it funds those trusts. So the mother load trust is your banking trust, and then you do not want that on the screen. We had talked about this before, so let me go over it real quick again. When you go there, you want to tell them, I do not want this to be used for training purposes, nor do I want the tellers or the bankers, the local branch, to even see the mother load trust. As a matter of fact, I'm going to insist that I have to physically go to my wealth management company and physically be there and transfer money out of the mother load trust anytime that has to be done. I want that secluded away from everybody's eyes. So when I go into the bank and I'm doing some banking, and then they pull up all your accounts. I use Wells Fargo right now. They pull up all your accounts. They see all my trusts. I have a few.
No.
But that mother load trust better not show up on any banking screen. I don't want anybody there knowing how much money I've got.
Right.
Okay, so does that kind of help you with your question? Or if not, ask me again, and I'll figure out what I can help you with.
Okay. Actually, from what I think Carol may be familiar with the structure that we used when we first bought this a few years back, where it showed that the mother load was totally isolated and it would move funds into a banking trust that we just called it a banking trust for. But anyway, from that banking trust, the banking trust would actually fund all the others, and it would have outside access like checking account, credit cards, banking cards, whatever, and all your business would be transacted through that banking trust into these other trusts. And the mother load would never have anything moved out of it unless we, like you said, personally let them know what amounts we wanted moved and so forth. Does that make sense? Do you remember that structure thing that was out to begin with?
I think that's
yeah, We talked about, basically it is a management trust, but we talked about using a secondary trust back then.
Okay.
And a secondary trust would be the management trust. You agree, Jim?
Okay.
I agree.
All right. Got your card. Just a change of name. It's now called the management. Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Thanks, Norma. Okay. We have Mr. Martin. How nice to hear from you today. Jim? Oh, you went away. Jim Martin, are you there? Well, I guess he doesn't want to talk to us today, Jim. There he is.
Sorry. The lady that was asking about the automobile trust, the best way I've found to be able to try and explain that is think of the Ted Kennedy situation in Chappaquiddick. I referred to it as the Chappaquiddick Trust because the only thing that anybody, including the Kopechne family, could get when that car went in the drink was the salvage value of the car and the insurance that was on the car, period. They could touch nothing else of the Kennedys. That's why
right.
You want a trust like that for every vehicle, every boat, every individual home, so that they can go after only that item and the insurance on it, but they can get absolutely nothing else.
Well said. I like that.
Very well said. I keep forgetting that. I mean, it's such a long time ago, but that is one of the best examples of how much these trusts can save you.
That's why I use that as an example.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. It's perfect now.
Thank you.
So, you're welcome. Thank you so much. Well, Jim, it is about 8 minutes of the hour. You have any closing comments?
Well, it's going to be a wild and crazy week from what I'm seeing in more ways than one. One is we're looking at what's some interesting scenarios unfolding within the government, some interesting people. Names that we all know will be soon wearing orange, I hope, and jumpsuits. And there's a lot of scuttlebutt out there about the RV, which we just listen to. We don't promote. We just listen to it. And I have a lot of work. So I took a lot of notes here. I want to try and get this website up and organize to because these are important things we need to handle right away. So I'll get that done. I'll work on that. Other than that, no, that's my comments.
Oh, okay. Do you want to add your contact information now or want to wait till later or what do you want to do?
No, I'll add it now.
Okay.
Of course, my name is Jim Knox. I'm in Salem, Oregon, Pacific time. I work from usually 9 to 6, Monday through Friday. I don't work on weekends. Well, I do. I work real hard on weekends, but I usually catch up on things. So I don't take calls on weekends. And if you call me on the weekend, then I will try and get back with you. We do have one person that called this week, and you and I talked about it. I didn't get back with him. I don't know if you do. We'll get off the line here, and I'll talk about it. But the you can get hold of me through security@indicatorinformation.com. And right now, if you have questions, let's say that this week might be an interesting week, feel free to send me. Email me your questions, and either Carol or I will get back with you right away. I'm looking forward to having a lot done on this website this week. I'm just rambling. Let me get going.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jim.
I wanted to say. I can't remember what it was. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And thanks for your help, as always. I think that about wraps it up for today. You know, like many of you, we've heard that we must have a trust when we exchange, so I urge you to be prepared. Typical turnaround time is less than a week right now, but I expect it to be considerably longer post-RV. Our contract prices are well priced at only $19.95 for new clients and $16.95 for additional trusts for family or for family members. We also offer a $300 referral fee for any fully paid new trust. Thank you for your attention and your attendance today. I do appreciate it. We look forward to hearing from you soon, and have a happy I forgot to give my information. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Again, my name is Carol Werlius. My number is 877-333-5018. I am in Central Time. 10 to 6 are my best hours. Like Jim, I try not to work on weekends. The best way to reach me is info@indicatorinformation.com. We look forward to serving you. And as I said, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Thanks for your attention today, guys. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.